This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.
You're listening to the best of FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio presents...
Tell them, Volkswagen.
Today, I'm joined by the absolutely stunning Andrea Gibson. Do you think a lot of your sexuality, gender identity is present in your work? Do you really lean into that?
Yeah, it's all through it, actually. Even when I try to, it's sort of like Jesus. Jesus finds his way into all my poems. Somehow, Jesus has made his way in there. Maybe it's because I think Jesus might be pretty genderqueer, but the I'm going to get in trouble for
saying that. I'm very intrigued by that thought. Yeah, no, I see it.
Yeah, I see it. You know what I mean?
Every Wednesday,
Callum McSwiggan,
from 6 p.m. FUBAR Radio.
Today I'm joined by the incredible Lucy Whittaker. How are you doing, Lucy?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm amazing. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
I want to have a little bit of a chat about some of the controversy that has been happening in the world.
Yes.
And particularly I want to talk about NSPCC. So for anyone listening who doesn't know what's been happening, basically NSPCC Childline kind of took on Monroe Bergdorf, transgender activist, as one of their LGBT advocates, one of their campaign ambassadors. And then a few days after they announced this, they then dropped her because of a kind of backlash from a lot of transphobic people online. Now, I don't know if you've seen any of this, Lucy.
Yeah, I'm well aware.
I feel like it's absolutely outrageous for a start. You know, I myself have given NSPCC Childline quite a lot of my time.
Yeah.
You know, I've given my time to go, you know, and work on videos, you know, promoting LGBT plus topics, mm-hmm. talking about issues, trying to help young people. And for them to then now turn around and kind of, you know, sever their relationship with this trans person just because they got a bit of backlash. Mm-hmm. I just think it's heartbreaking and it's damaging. It's awful for Monroe, but it's also awful for, you know, all the young people that look up to them as a charity organization and look to them for help and for them to do something like that. And I think there are so many people in this community, myself included, who are just very, I guess, hurt.
Yeah.
Hurt by the whole situation.
Yeah. It's just really sad. And, you know, yeah, I mean, the whole thing is, I think, obviously, they were always going to face backlash from people because they were taking a massive step forward in getting a trans advocate mm-hmm. and a trans ambassador, which is an amazing thing. And yeah, they, you know, they were obviously well aware that they were going to face more backlash than they would ordinarily. But I think it's just they were too quick to act, and they've done it without any proper justification. I've really been reading into it online. There are all these different theories about whether the initial account was like a spam thing, which was made just for this purpose to try and degrade her.
I saw some of this as well. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's, I don't know. There are so many layers, but I just think it's blatant transphobia. And I think with anyone else, they wouldn't have reacted this quickly.
No.
They wouldn't have dismissed her. And yeah, it's just too quick. Not enough thought's gone into it. Not enough care has been taken. And it just makes you much more aware of what she, and, you know, not just Monroe, but so many trans people, what they must face on an everyday basis. You know, this is just one part of everything she deals with. Yeah, it's just really sad.
Lucy, I want to have a little bit of a chat about Pulse. Today is the 3-year anniversary since the tragedy happened in Orlando. Where were you? What were you doing when you first heard about what happened in Orlando 3 years ago?
I was in Leeds, up north where I used to live. And I think, yeah, I woke up and it was the first thing that I saw. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there was just this overwhelming sense of A, shock.
Yeah.
And B, injustice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was shocked, but also part of me wasn't. And that was like the worst bit.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. And I think that reiterates what so many people, you know, have been saying. So many people woke up and were just like shocked and horrified. Like, how could this actually happen in this world? How could these 49 lives be taken away from us in mm-hmm. such a horrific way? And I think it made a lot of people feel very helpless.
Mm-hmm.
And I know for me, I never really looked at our community in the same way.
Yeah.
And I really felt a massive feeling of kind of family and a home, and like somebody had attacked that family.
Yeah.
And for the first time in my life, I'm actually, there's not been many times in my life where I've got upset to the point of crying about something that didn't directly affect me. You know, we hear about so many tragedies in the world, and I often find it quite difficult to empathize and connect with those tragedies because, you know, it's often on the other side of the world, and it's people you don't know. And yet for the first time, I was just kind of grief-stricken.
Mm-hmm.
However, on the positive side of the whole thing, and obviously it was dreadful, it feels kind of strange to say that there could be any positive, was the way I feel like the community came together afterwards. I don't know if you attended any vigils or anything yourself.
Yeah, because I remember it was London Pride a few weeks after, and I was really umming and ahhing as to whether to go because I just felt like...
unsafe?
Yeah, basically. And I'd never been that aware of feeling that unsafe before. But there was a vigil, I think maybe a few days before London Pride, and I couldn't go, but I watched a live stream and got really emotional.
Was it the one on Old Compton Street?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just, the whole thing is just... awful and tragic, but I do think people did come together and people really rallied around, and I felt like there was a real sense of people uniting. People who wouldn't ordinarily be drawn to issues like this were actually, I think it was a big enough tragedy for people to go, oh my god, okay, right, something needs to happen because this can't carry on, this isn't okay.
Everybody took a moment to actually start caring about these issues and to care for, you know, non-LGBT plus people were suddenly, you know, checking in on their LGBT plus friends.
Yeah.
How are you feeling? Or like LGBT plus people also checking in on each other. And I think the kindness and the compassion that came out of that, and I hope that, you know, I want that to be something that we keep. I want us to 100%. Keep that kindness and compassion, stay as a community and remember, you know, how it made us feel and how we came together. And I want us to continue that forevermore.
Definitely. And also to be safe. I've been in clubs a few times where I've seen people who look just not like they are having a good time. And like, they're, you know, I was in a club once. There was this guy in like a massive puffer jacket by himself, just standing there like an older guy with a bag on. And I saw him and I was just like, do you know what? I'm not risking it. And I know we shouldn't judge, but
put your safety first.
There was this moment where I was like, do you know what? Something doesn't feel right about this. And I think people should be really aware of staying safe, even just holding hands in public and being okay with doing that and, you know, being afraid. You know, obviously we should be visible and of course we should be able to hold hands in public and, you know, be who we are. But ultimately, if you feel really unsafe and it comes down to it, just put your safety first, because
absolutely,
you know, it's not worth protesting all the time if it's going to result in potential incident.
I completely agree. You know, there've been times where I've been like holding hands in maybe like a shopping center and things, and maybe I'm getting a few looks. It's an old woman looks at you a bit funny or whatever. And it's like, no, you know what? I'm going to carry on holding hands because I feel a bit uncomfortable, but you know, it's almost a protest to do that. And it's a celebration. I want to hold my partner's hand, but then there are times, you know, walking home
at night
mm-hmm. and maybe a gang of lads or something passes you and they look at you in a certain way and you think, you know what, we're not going to hold hands here.
This is
not safe. It's not worth it. Not everything has to be a protest. You're absolutely right.
Hi guys, I'm Freddie Bentley. You may know me from the reality show The Circle or me being uncensored on Instagram. I love it here at FUBAR. I've been here a few times now, first time on Callum's show, and I just love the fact that you can just say what you want, when you want, and nothing's got to be edited or bleeped out. I feel like I'm someone that hasn't got a filter, so FUBAR is the place for me, huns.
FUBAR Radio presents Harriet Rose.
St. John's in the building!
Fresh off a plane too.
Are you feeling saintly today?
I feel the same every day, sexy.
Are you on a radio station where you can swear, so
I like
it's a
that.
Little
let's
bit
just,
less?
Let's just test it.
Go for it.
Let's go. You know what? Let's do a back and forth real quick, me
okay.
and you, right?
Yeah, go.
I'm gonna say the first curse word I think of. You say the second. We're just gonna keep going until somebody dropped the ball. You ready?
This couldn't be
this
more
This is like
me.
Ratchet Olympics. Are you ready for this?
I'm fucking ready.
All right, cool. All right, hold on. I gotta start.
Okay, you go.
Right, fuck.
Shit.
Hole.
Bugger.
Slut.
Cock.
Cunt.
Dick.
Dick.
Fanny.
Oh,
I win!
Oh shit! Did I lose the Ratchet Olympics?
Every Thursday from 4 p.m. on FUBAR Radio.
Farah, hello!
Hello!
How are you, lovely?
I'm great, thank you. How are you?
I'm so much better now I've seen your jacket. She's wearing
it's
a wonderful
so many compliments.
Orange tartan jacket, and it's really woken me up.
Great. I'm glad in this miserable weather I could bring some colour.
We just had a bit of a lull about this because we're going to be talking about nothing today, aren't we? Absolutely
nothing.
Which is your brand new single. Tell me a bit about how it's not nothing.
So it is about feeling nothing.
Yeah.
I actually wrote it when I was in a bit of a dark place. Mm-hmm. I was feeling shit and I thought, I need to get this down because that's my way of kind of coping. But it all fell into place and loads of people messaged me saying like, thank you so much for this song because you've described exactly how I'm feeling. And as sad as that is that people are feeling like that, if I can make them feel less alone, then my job's done. That's why I did the song, because I just thought a lot of people probably don't know I'm feeling like this. So, you know, just hopefully raising awareness that,
well, it's worked, babe, because if you even had one message, if you even had one message from one person saying this has helped me, then you're doing your job, you're doing what you need to do.
Exactly.
And that is the reason why you put that song out. You know, that is why you do that. I had like an awkward thing that happened last week that made me sad. And so I got in the car and I was driving home and I just listened to Adele's two albums, 19 and 21.
Yeah.
And I just cried for like two hours. But you know, when it's like, it was amazing.
You know what? I was literally thinking about this on the way here. I kind of call it like, you know when you bleed a radiator?
Yeah.
Sometimes I feel like I need to just like bleed my radiator.
Yes.
And I actually did it the other day. It's kind of hilarious. If you were a fly on the wall, you'd be like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yes.
I was really sad the other day.
Yeah.
So I was on my own in my flat and I was like, I just need to cry. So I put on Eva Cassidy, Songbird.
Mate,
and I wailed.
Oh, yeah. That has made me, no offense, but that's made me laugh. I'll tell you why. Because I remember when I was really young and I literally only had Eva Cassidy's album, and like, I just think of sad things and then I'd be like, oh yes, right, time for some Eva Cassidy. Boom! Literally.
I'm so glad you can relate.
No one can make you cry like Eva Cassidy
can.
Honestly,
I was wailing. Like, I kept thinking, if anyone could see me right now, they'd be quite scared. I was literally like,
ah! Oh my. It's like, you need that though.
I needed it and I felt amazing.
I feel
after.
Like I want to cry now because it's like, God, this is so funny. I want to cry.
Should we just put it on for like
yes!
everyone?
Honestly, no, it's dangerous. We can't do that to other people. No, it's not fair. It's also because I think partly because she's dead as well.
I know.
And she died in such a tragic way that I think I'm then also crying about that.
Yeah, no, I did the same. I read up on her because I was like, oh my God, her voice is amazing. I don't know enough about her.
Oh God. See, when I was younger, I knew a lot. Yeah.
Oh no, it broke my heart. And then I was like, I'm sad about that now.
Yeah, because she was sick. And then it's like, now she's gone. And it's like, you can't, you know. Oh God.
And she died way too young.
Yes.
It just broke my heart. And I read something like a record label didn't want her. And then when she died, they were like, oh, we should have signed her. And I was like, that's awful.
Yeah. Oh, it's
just broke my heart.
Yeah.
Don't wait till someone dies to like.
It's give so
them
dark.
The, yeah.
Because she obviously became huge after she died.
Huge. Yeah.
But I did it with Adele because Adele's really good for that.
Is she? Whoa. I've not actually done it to Adele before.
Oh God, Adele's good for it because she's got songs. She's got the whole range. So she's got the sad songs, but she's also got the like
bit
fuck
sassy.
You songs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then she's also got the like half fuck you, half sad songs. So you really go through it.
Yeah.
You really go through it with that, babe, honestly. And I did it and I felt so much better afterwards. I mean, I was tired. Like, I had two, like, younger men, like, revving to see into the window. Because I was just letting it flow. I was letting it
good
all flow.
Good for you. Well, I'm proud of you.
Thank you. And I'm proud of you. Just going back to your name.
Yeah.
We were just talking about Farah, and because your dad is Iranian, right?
Iranian, yeah.
And he introduced you to traditional Iranian music when you were younger.
Yeah. So in Iran, when the revolution happened, music was actually banned. Especially, it's really sad. Especially women singing was seen as this sexual, just sinful thing. But my dad was always playing Iranian music, and I was like,
females?
Female kind of groups of like male and female singing, classical, like violinists and stuff like that. And he also sings nonstop Iranian songs around the house. He set up a YouTube channel, I'm not joking.
No!
Of him singing Iranian songs, just a cappella.
Oh,
he doesn't have any equipment.
That is the
it's just him
thing
recording
I've
himself.
Ever heard. Is it really bad quality?
It's awful.
Oh,
and he doesn't
Dad.
Have any. He needs to get a press shot or something. It's just black. And it just says, Seraj Shakachi. And it's him, like, going,
so, oh my God. So it's not
hilarious.
Actually him, it's just the sound of his
no,
voice.
No, no, no. It's him singing.
Yeah, but you can't see him.
You can't see him. I think he's got a little profile picture.
That is hilarious. I mean, amazing, but.
It's amazing.
You
so,
need to help your dad.
I know.
Help him. Come on.
I'm trying to like plug him on every like interview.
Yeah,
I did
here
it on,
we go.
I had a radio interview the day and I was like, just check out my dad's YouTube channel. You know, it's not, it's his hobby.
Hashtag subscribe.
But he really like steals my thunder because all my friends are obsessed with him. So I'm just like, Can you give me the attention?
You're like, Dad, give me a break. I'm trying to like do my career here and you're just doing your hobby and getting more attention.
Exactly.
Well, thank you, Farah, so much for coming in. It's been really lovely to chat to you. Also, big up to your dad for his YouTube channel.
Love you, Dad.
Seraj. How do I pronounce it?
Seraj.
Seraj.
S-E-R-A-J.
Seraj. Good luck with the YouTube channel, babe. I'm rooting for you. Thank you. Send my love to him, won't you?
I will. Okay. You can say. Do you want to say it in Iranian?
Yes. It's, oh my God, more
Duset
than
Daram.
Duset Daram.
Yeah, that's you've just told my dad you love him, and I'm going to play him this back.
Oh,
he will love it.
Oh, yay!
This is Dr. Kane.
This is Jay Vades.
Together with Dr. Vades, we was on the Harriet Rose show. Honestly, best interview I've had in my life. She's hilarious. She's actually, if was a white female, that would be my twin, basically.
A Ross Clark G.
She's proper, like, our kind of people. She's edgy. And just,
she gets it.
She gets it. Just raw, raunchy. That 100%. That's us.
FUBAR Radio presents
Emoldsworth.
We're joined now in the studio by Tom Milner and Luke Friend.
Hello.
We're going to be talking about the 10th anniversary tour of Green Day's American Idiot. So the show is a story, then?
It's American Idiot album from top to bottom with a few additions from different albums.
Okay.
With Green Day. But yeah, it's amazing, like, because Green Day music attracts, like, the Green Day fans as well. So you've got a mixture of people coming to see the show. And some of them don't know how to react in a theatre. That you can't sit there on your phone and you can't be talking. You can't
Which
be
is, in its own way,
farting
brilliant.
Loud.
Change it from American Idiot to Yorkshire Fannies.
Yeah.
Just for
Yorkshire twats.
Yeah, Yorkshire twats.
Yorkshire twats. So yeah.
Every Monday,
Ian Goldsworth
from 4 p.m.
FUBAR Radio.
Talking of cheeky happened. Though, it's now.
No, it's Chico.
Chico. Cheeky Chico.
You can't say Cheeky Chico, that's it.
Do you want to go with... Is that what we're going with?
We're going
Cheeky Chico?
That's exactly it. I'm Cheeky Chico.
As if
Cheeky Chico, talk into the mic.
As if Chico wasn't a good enough brand in itself, you've added Cheeky to it.
That's it.
How are you, man?
Do you know what? I feel alive. I'm grateful to just be breathing, to be honest.
That's a good start. Well, do you know, I didn't know about this. Nat just told me, like, earlier on.
Yeah.
That you had a bit of a scrape with death.
Yeah. 7 months ago, I had what you may call a near-death experience, not realising it was a stroke, thinking it was a spiritual.
Yeah,
major stroke, like a 50 pence blood clot in the right hemisphere on my brain.
Okay.
Thought that it was a spiritual experience, and of course it wasn't, because when your left arm starts going numb and you start going, and everything starts to go, you should actually take, you should remember the fast advert, which is, you know, look at your face, is your arm going funny, you know, speech and time or tongue, you know, and all of those things were happening, but... I think my ignorance at the time saved me because I in my head I was going, strokes only happen to people who don't look after themselves or, you know, maybe slightly senior or not. I didn't think people that worked out were fitness fanatics with a six-pack at 47 will have it.
That's the weird thing, isn't it? Because I'm a little bit younger than you, but not much. But I'm like, I would be a dead cert for a stroke, surely.
Well, touch wood, that no. Don't want to say that and put it out there,
if it happens, it happens, but... But you know, I understand, but you know, I would certainly have had you down as like, no, he's super fit, that dude. He'll have a stroke when he's 67 or 70.
Whatever, you know, and you're probably not. But you see, again, this is the misconception of this. It could happen to literally anybody.
Yeah.
What we're talking about there is prevention. For me, prevention is better than cure. That's probably why we're doing this whole fitness thing weekender at Pontins. But it's about highlighting that this could happen to anybody, but also... You can do certain stuff to help it because a great percentage is a lifestyle.
Okay. Yeah. So what would be... So it's called the 48-hour party, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
48hourparty.com. And what does that actually entail?
Well, it's kind of like we're calling it Chico's Block Fit Party. And what I've done was we collaborated with Pontins, basically. And what we're doing is I'm inviting the whole fitness industry. And I'm not just talking about the industry from a physical point of view, because there's, again, that misconception.
Yeah.
Everyone is buying to the outside, which is the physical, which is a six-pack and a J-Lo butt. Yeah. And what we're saying...
Not quite everyone. Can I just... I'm going to pull you up.
There is a six-pack there, just under a few dinners.
Yeah, more or less. It's not. I'm a very muscly man. I've said this before. I'm a very muscly man, but it is very buried. But I used to be super, like, not. That's not true. I don't know why I was going to even lie.
I was going to be super fit.
I wasn't super, but I was physically super fit. I wasn't. Yeah. I didn't look super fit, but I played sport.
Can I just say what you just said there? That is exactly the misconception that people think that you have to look fit to be fit, and that's actually not true. You know, I trained over 500 instructors to teach my BlockFit brand, and honest to God, some of my best fit instructors are actually mothers who've had a few kids, who are a little bit on sort of the curvy side, may I say. And mate, listen, they give anybody a run for the money. And when you look for them, they are brilliant at what they do. They look fantastic. And again, they are like healthy on the outside. And that's and that's the misconception is some people could look healthy on the outside but are fat on the inside and vice versa.
I'm both. Yeah. I'm fat inside and out. Have you got a kebab trailer where people can get, if they wanted to get a kebab?
Oh, yeah. They listen, we cater for everything. And what I believe is the middle road is the best. Being extreme at anything, being on one side of the same sort of line is no good. You've got to be somewhere in the middle. In other words, train, keep active, eat well, but never deny yourself anything.
There is a worrying aspect because it's a very thin line between. There's a very thin line of going, of then losing perception of what you actually even look like.
That's
and,
right.
You know, and losing perception of what's fit. And once you get addicted to losing weight, you then can't stop.
That's
and
right.
There comes a point where you have to stop.
Yeah. Well, again, you know, bodybuilding is a great example of that.
Yeah.
You know, a normal person in the street would look at someone. Male or female, and go, wow, I'd love to look like that. But that person.
Don't look at Nat when you say that.
But that.
Thank you,
Chico.
Thank you.
No, well, you wouldn't.
He just said it to me.
But you see.
Thank you, Chico.
I'd love to look like that. But you see, what they don't understand is that very person who everyone wants to look like is actually a prisoner sometimes by looking,
in
going, I'm not big enough, I'm not cut enough, I'm not this enough.
Yeah.
And what we're trying to do here is to go, hey, middle the road is where it's at.
The entire raison d'etre of the BlockFit thing is because of the experience that you had. Okay, that's where that's arrived out of that. Yet the irony of it is that you were super fit.
Yeah.
And you did have a stroke.
That's
do you know what I mean? So that's, it's a difficult thing to sort of go, hey, get fit and you'll be all right. It's like, well, you wouldn't. You know.
Yeah, well, it's funny. It's almost like that. Someone on Twitter, you know, just wrote down and went, oh my, you know, obviously he was swearing, but it was like, oh my effing God.
If you want to swear, Chico, you swear. If you want to swear, you swear.
I got children, I tell him not to swear. but he was like, oh my effing God, you know, if super fit Chico, healthy living, and can have a stroke, what chances have I got with, you know, 4 packets of crisps and a pint in my hand or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So that is actually, even though it's funny, it's like, wow. But you see, I'm the 0.0000%.
Of course. No, I mean, anybody that's taking solace in some, that's like people saying, well, my grand smoked 40 a day. She died at 90. It's like,
But that is like a
but
really,
how many grands lived till they were 90 and were smoking 40 a day?
And you know, what I would say to that would be, you know, there are times when your time is up, and doesn't matter what you do and how fit or unfit you are, your time is up.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, clearly it wasn't Chico.
Do you believe that? Do you believe 100%. Predestination.
Look, when your time is up, your time is up.
Yeah.
And when your time is up, no one can prevent it. And if it's not, no one can stop it.
Hi, my name's Robert Ems, and I just got off Ian's show on Fubar Radio talking about Chernobyl, which is a series that I'm in, which is on Sky Atlantic. We had a great chat. We covered a lot of ground from Kick-Ass 2, which I was in, Chernobyl, obviously, and lots of other things. It was great to be here.
You're listening to Fubar Radio.
Take you there, I'll make the most.
I'm in a clear view, closer, I appear like images inside your rear view, curling up like smoke drifting out from the nostrils, overcome colossal obstacles, calm down the high school rascals, it's impossible, I make a million from minerals under my land that's formed from gas particles and fossils, retreat to my fortress of solitude, then I study my molecules, the physiology of man is biological, although it seems radical, life is mathematical, birth on this planet Earth in the universe is the most habitable, pine trees on green hills, I seen queens, I seen mills, I know the potential of a seed is sometimes concealed.
Just take a photograph, I gotta go, oh, oh, yeah, I never really knew you, I mean, I never really tried to find the way
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
Tuesday Takeover with Henry Dean on FUBAR Radio.
What's going on, people? Welcome to the show. My name's Henry Dean. This show's called Feet Wet. We're going to be talking about getting those all-important first steps in the career of your choice, in the creative arts, in media. I, by trade, am a director and photographer. I work mostly in music, a little bit in fashion, make some branded content, all that fun stuff. Today, we're just in here to spill the beans on how we get started, because there's a lot out there in the world on the internet about how people level up through the industry and famous people's stories. But I know when I was starting out, I was thirsty for knowledge about how to take those very first steps and what can I do today and what can I do right now? What do I need to work on in order to get where I want to go? So I thought it would be cool to put the show together for the takeover here on FUBAR Radio, get some guests in, talk a little bit about their world, how they've established themselves in it and what they think you need to do as well to follow in their footsteps. Ash Nico's in the house.
Eat my pussy like it's lunch.
For those of you who don't know, Ash Nico is a recording artist, critically acclaimed recording artist, Ash Nico. She's joining us here in the FUBAR studio. Charles Morey's still here as well.
Hey, Charles Morey.
Hello.
So Ash, like Charles, you also moved here from afar a little while ago. Why don't you just fill the listeners in slightly on your story of how you arrived here in London?
Hey guys, I'm Ash Nico. So I moved to the UK when I was 18 years old from Latvia, where I spent my high school years, which is where I'm not from. I'm from North Carolina the United States of America. So I knew that I wanted to do music. So I need to sneeze, but I can't get it out.
Well, it'll come at some point. Just make sure you do it right into Charles's mic.
Okay, I will. All right. I knew I wanted to do music. I've known I wanted to do music since I was about 14. That's when I first started writing my rhymes, learning how to songwrite. and then I moved here.
Why London? What gave you that? What gave you that jump start? What made you want to come here in the first place from Latvia?
I wanted to get away from my parents, first and foremost. I'm from, like, small town. Well, basically, when I was a kid, I, like, hated everyone. And I was just like, you small town motherfuckers. Y'all don't know anything. I was just so, like, elitist. I thought I was, like, above everyone in my small town, which, in hindsight, I was a dickhead. But I knew that I wanted to live in a big city from a very young age. And I chose London because I am also a European, so I decided I really like London. It's like a really nice hub. I feel like So I was also thinking about New York or LA. So it was between the three cities. And LA are not very easy to get to.
They're not. Mm. Not from Riga.
Not from Riga. I mean, they are easy to get to, but like, I just feel like London is more of a hub.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I agree. I think London, I've been really coming around to this opinion a little more recently, but I think London is, at right now at least, is the...
It feels like the center, of everything, really.
Culturally, I think this is popping right now. Like, what's cool in London is the driving force of what's cool around the world. What I admire about you is that you, before you even moved here, you were coming here on the weekends. You were, like, involving yourself in the scene. And I think that is hard, especially when you don't know anyone. We were just talking about earlier, moving to a new city and not knowing anyone.
Mm-hmm.
The hard thing is answering that question of, like, well, how do I meet people? How do I get to know the people that I need to know?
I have kids in my DMs who are, they're like, oh, like, how do you, like, make those connections?
Yeah.
And, like, you can tell people as much as you want, like, follow your dreams and never stop hustling, and it's a great sentiment, but yeah, it is like, how do you actually do it?
When you arrived in London as a fresh-faced teen with some diss tracks on the internet that popped off in Latvia, but not knowing anyone else here, how did you transition from, okay, I'm this teenager that's in the big city that wants to make it happen, to I'm Ash Nico myself?
Confidence, baby. No, because you don't all of a sudden, like, access this database of people that you should know.
Precisely.
It just kind of happens gradually, and all of a sudden you then look back at, you take account of how, where you are in the moment, and you're like, oh wait, I'm actually doing all right. And I've done that recently. I've now, like, looked at myself, and I've been like, I am a professional.
Yeah.
I'm actually a professional at what I do. And I know a lot of people in this industry, which is something that when I was 18, I would have done anything for. But when I was 18, I wanted it right then.
Yeah.
My name is Daniel Lawrence Taylor, and I am the creative writer and actor of Time Wasters. I love being on FUBAR. It's quite relaxed, it's quite fun, and yeah, I always have a good time. Big fan.
FUBAR Radio presents Michael Payne and Marcel Somerville.
It is, of course, DJ Yoda, the one and only.
Yo.
It's a weird name. I hate it.
And really? Really?
I've hated it for years. Like,
tell us more.
I've had the name for like 25 years or something.
Right.
When I first got named, it was just kind of the lack of anything else. Coming up with names is really hard.
It
coming
is.
Up with names for albums or songs or any of that stuff, I really struggle. So I just had a Yoda toy by my turntables, and then my mate was like, you got to call yourself something, just like DJ Yoda. And it stuck. But honestly, like, I'm not really a massive Star Wars fan.
Michael Payne and Marcel Somerville.
Every Wednesday
from 4 p.m. FUBAR Radio.
We've got a fucking legend in the studio with us right now.
She's wearing leopard print.
Damn it.
And she sang leopard print.
And she sang one of the biggest dance tunes, like, literally ever in history.
Wow. It's a fact.
Point blank, period. Like fact. Americans say, with the T on the end.
Underlined.
Period.
Fact.
Undeniable fact.
You can see we're excited that you're
here. I am flying, literally.
We're basically going to spend half an hour doing this intro.
I love it.
And then by the time we actually introduce you, it'll be the end of the show. No, it is Rosala.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. Great to be here.
No, it's
wonderful
great to have you. It's great to
Thank
have you.
You.
I never thought I would be meeting you.
Wow.
All those years ago when, like, my sister and I, we used to, like, everybody's free, like, that was an anthem for everybody.
Wow, thank you so much.
Literally everybody. And like I said, I just never ever thought that I would be talking
in the flesh.
In the flesh, you know, to the woman who sang that song.
Oh my God. When I get, you know, told that, I have a lot of people later on in my life saying, I never thought I'd speak to you. And
it's
wow,
true.
This is amazing.
Hmm.
It totally throws me. I feel...
That's crazy. Honestly,
it totally throws me. I think, what?
Do you remember that session?
I do. I got to the studio with two guys called Tim and Nigel, who were known as the Band of Gypsies.
Right.
They loved my voice. They had songs for my voice at the time. And they said, what do you want? I said, look, I want to do uplifting, hardcore dance tracks that, you know, I don't even want to sit down when my songs come on.
Nice.
You know, and I want them to lift their hands up in the air and go, this is really positive.
Yeah.
And Nigel's like, look, I got this chorus, just going to the studio and sing it. And I started singing Everybody's Free to Feel Good and just making up, you know, you make up things. And it's like, that's the melody. Let's use that melody. And I just sung it over and over again. And we got the chorus. It's like, right, we got the chorus. Let me write the verses now. What do you want? I'm like, I told you, uplifting.
More positivity.
More positivity.
Pile it on.
Brothers and sisters, together we'll make it through. Mm-hmm. That says it all.
Did you envisage that it would be this big?
At the time, no. Because, you know, when you're in the studio and I'm recording tracks, I just think majority of the tracks I record, I think they're good. But when it's out there in the open world, it's beyond your control.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you just hope for the best. And at the time, Born to Love You was released and it became a sort of a club, sort of underground hit. Mm-hmm. And it didn't do anything. It didn't cross over commercially. Then we released Faith in the Power of Love. Mm-hmm. That kind of went top 75. So we're not going anywhere, but I'm going, oh, in the
we're
top 75.
We're onto something.
In the top 100, positive. So that's good.
Keep pushing positivity. Yeah, keep pushing. Pile on the positivity.
There you go, there you go. So then they released Are You Ready to Fly? And then that just went top 20.
Yeah.
And then they released Everybody's Free, and
whoo, the rest
hello,
is history.
The rest is history.
Incredible. Were you a big clubber before, you know, penning these big dance hits?
Well, yes and no, not really. I mean, I used to be a DJ, if that says anything.
Yeah,
you know,
no,
I used to spin records in a nightclub in Zimbabwe, where I grew up, and used to play in bands and go around different venues, you know, doing other people's songs.
Yeah.
And obviously, I always knew I wanted to be a singer and make this my lifetime career.
Yeah.
That was my ambition.
Oh, has your kind of positive attitude always been this infectious as well? Did you ever have like naysayers and people who
absolutely
would talk shit and say you weren't
with them? Oh God, you always get them in life. You know, you always get miserable people who want to bring you down. And you know, you just got to tell yourself, just keep putting one foot in front of the other.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember in Zimbabwe, I told some friends, I want to be an international artist. And I was 21, 22 at the time. And one of them says, listen, you passed it. You're old. It's not going to happen.
What? How old was you?
I was 21. I was 20, 21. And it's over. You know, 23, go and get your walking stick. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And I think, wow. And one of them told me there was this little small village in Zimbabwe. And they're like, listen, you know, you're that age now. Just get married, have kids, and forget about it.
Damn.
You know, so I had that.
Yeah.
I had that. And funnily enough, it just lit that fire inside me.
I was going to say, was there an element of defiance in your music?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, I know there's obviously a lot of celebration and there's lots of positivity.
Absolutely.
But is there an element of like...
if you're going to tell me you can't do that, I'm going to show you.
Yeah.
Michael, I'm going to show you. I'm going to do it.
I'm going
to try my best. Because everybody's free to feel good.
Apart from
you
the jacuzzi in Love Island.
It's true. You better be feeling good in that jacuzzi. Shereef, you better not be in that jacuzzi, bro.
Well, I mean, you're free to feel good for now, but we're going to have to talk about that later.
Yeah, right.
And now you're free to go.
Yo, it's T Muller. I've just been on FUBAR Radio. Had a great experience with Michael Payne and Marcel. It was very relaxed. Everyone was bubbly and that. Very natural and that. They let me swear. It was just real shit, man. I love it, man.
FUBAR Radio presents Access All Areas.
My real favourite doctor's here.
Dr. Raj.
We love you from this morning show. You. Lovely to see you.
Thank you. I can't believe I'm amongst friends. I've known you both for so long.
What happened, Stephen?
We were in a bar.
Oh, Stephen.
We got very drunk and I went to order a drink at the bar and we might have had a snog.
I swore I'd never say that. Oh gosh, they're all screaming
at me.
Look at his face.
You snubbed my favourite doctor.
Yes.
I wondered why he was skipping to the studio.
Every Thursday from 6 p.m. FUBAR Radio.
Hello and welcome to Access All Areas with me, Stephen Leng, and actually not Lizzie Cundy this week. We have the absolutely gorgeous Georgie Clark joining
us. Thank you, Stephen. It's good to be here again.
Yeah, it's been a while. You came on as a guest, I reckon it was about 2 years ago now.
I know, on yours and Lizzie's show.
Yeah.
Talking all things gossip.
Shall we get our first guest in?
Yes, I'm so excited.
We have our first guest in the studio, the very lovely Mark Spellman. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm very, very well.
We could say pretty fresh off our TV screens, couldn't we?
Pretty fresh.
From Britain's Got Talent.
A week and a bit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's probably been quite intense for you, isn't it?
It has been intense, actually. Lots of interviews, but all good.
Yeah.
All good. Busy's good.
Well, you're one of the very rare people that have done Britain's Got Talent twice.
I think I'm the first person that's gone through to the semi-finals and then come back again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But the key was is that the second time round, no one knew who you were.
That's how I wanted it to be.
Yeah.
There was specific reasons why I thought if I went back as Mark Spellman, there was...
They'd say you've already done it.
Well, clear off. Get out of it, right?
Were you nervous, though, to do it for a second time? Because
no.
You
no,
weren't?
No. Do you know what? I think the hardest time of doing anything is the first time.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, I guess at least you knew what to expect.
Yeah,
from the
I knew
process.
What to expect. I knew the exact process. I knew that how I could achieve this... If I tried to be anonymous just off the bat first time round, I think I would have fallen a couple of times at a few hurdles. The fact that I'd been through the process before, mm-hmm. I knew lots of areas where I could get round that and get round that way and kind of avoid being discovered, if you like.
Mm-hmm. Was it hard to do that, though? So between the first year and the second year, you must have really had to have changed your act so that people didn't see, like, the similarity.
The correlation,
right,
yeah.
Okay, here's the funny thing, right? So I've got... bit of a poochy bottom, right? So some of the people recognised me because they sort of said, that's Mark's backside, clearly.
What?
Right? Like that, right? But,
really?
Not, but only in the magic industry.
Oh, okay.
Other magicians got in contact and said, the way that you held your hands up at the end of the performance, that's what you do. I know you do that. You know,
that is so good.
So the way that it worked with X was even going up for the very first audition in Manchester, I had a really good friend of mine, a guy called Colin, who's a magician colleague of mine. And I said to him, look, I'm going to audition for Britain's Got Talent. We auditioned exactly the same way that anybody else would. And then when we turned up for the audition in Manchester, I hired an apartment so I wouldn't be in the Holiday Inn where everybody was staying.
Right.
Because obviously if I walk around as me,
people
would go, look, it's Mark Spellman from last year's Britain's Got Talent, because they're all sort of contestants. They all watch the show.
Yeah, of course.
So you'd have to, so even to that extent, I'd have to sort of keep my identity concealed. I've turned up in the mask, I'm in the full outfit and everything else, and my friend Colin saying, this is X, he's auditioning today. Then the rest of the day I was in the mask, and it's almost like the production team loved this kind of weird guy that's going, does anyone know who the guy in the mask is and all that? And Colin would do all the talking for me. He knew the routine inside out. X would like to have his chairs here and here. He'll walk up here, he'll do this.
That's so good.
And it's funny because you'd get people that coming up saying, can we get X to... And he'd go, no, don't talk to X. Like, it was brilliant. It was so good.
That's how I imagine working with Simon Cowell is.
Yeah.
Don't talk to Simon. Talk to
polar opposite. But obviously, I've done the show 2 seasons now. Mm-hmm. And one of the things you learn about Simon is... He's a grafter. He will turn up and he needs to know everything, and it's this, that and the other. And even the show itself, the airing of the show, you never get to find out if you're going to definitely be on that Saturday's episode until Wednesday night.
Yes.
Simon can on a Wednesday night. I think it's a Tuesday or a Wednesday. He watches the episode in its entirety and he can turn around and go, bit too much magic, or we had a lot of magic last week, let's take a bit of magic out, mm-hmm. or let's put this in or change that around. So that's why it's that late. But he's that involved.
So he is really involved.
Massively involved. I think to be that successful on the level that he is, you have to be involved.
That's true.
Is he a nice guy?
Yes,
he's nice.
Absolutely. Absolutely, he's a really nice guy. I think, you know, I think
he was genuinely shocked, wasn't he?
Yeah, 100%. No one knew. And the one that I was really worried about was Alicia, because obviously I'm sort of I took the mask off, and in that moment you got all that emotion going through you as well, and it was like a colosseum. The TV doesn't do it justice. It was like a colosseum, the roar, because as the video,
you looked like you were going to burst into tears.
It was
honestly, on my life, you've got to imagine, I filmed Isabella in her cot 2.5 years ago. So I've been waiting 2.5 years to finish this trick.
That's a long time.
Finally,
the trick is over. It was a lot of emotion.
I've heard that you've got a trick for us.
So I am going to give you this first. This makes no sense whatsoever.
Okay.
Right? But I hand this to you first, but leave it right there. Don't look at it. All right?
Yeah.
And also, now there is going to be a naked flame, but no one's got, you haven't got a lot of hairs around, right?
No, I'm so fine. Right. Okay. I should be all right.
So I'd like you to give me a single digit. Give me a single digit. Anyone.
Can I say it to you?
Yeah, yeah.
Four.
Four, okay. Give me another single digit.
Four.
Four. Okay, are you sure you want to do that, right? Because normally what I say is if you said four and you said two, I would say, do you want 42 or 24? But you've said four and you've said four, so it kind of means it's 44, or do you want to change your number?
I think we stick.
Wow, yeah. Okay, good. Okay, so look, this is my phone. This is Isabella. What's your
gorgeous.
Sorry, proud dad moment, right? So look, all I'm going to do is I'm going to go along. Are you an Android or an iPhone person?
I have an Android.
Oof.
Get out.
Sorry. Get out of here.
I'm an iPhone.
Okay, do me a favour. You can see the Notes app app, sorry, and let me just do this.
Yeah, I can see.
Can you just hit open the notes app for me? Actually, take the phone.
Okay.
Right? And then have you opened up the notes, yes?
There we
go. So now you'll see there should be a list of celebrities there, yes?
Yes.
Yeah? Have a look at the list of celebrities, mm-hmm. and you guys have stuck on 44. You could have chosen any number. You could have changed even up to the last minute.
Mm-hmm.
Who is number 44?
Marilyn Monroe.
If you'd have changed to, like I said, 24 or 42, what's 42 on there? What would that have been?
Elvis Presley.
Elvis Presley, okay. Right, so you can see there's lots of different people on there. You could have said any numbers, right?
Okay, yeah.
But the thing that I did with Anna and Dec, do you remember with the 1989 in the audition, right? Yeah. That's called automatic writing. So what you do is you close your eyes, you let the pen move, and then hopefully it makes some sense. Mm-hmm. This was my automatic writing that I did earlier today. Marilyn Monroe, right?
Oh, wow.
You'll now see that out of all of those people, the one person.
Oh my God. No way! We were so close to changing the number as well.
Good job you didn't. Good job you didn't.
You were making me feel like maybe we should have.
Yeah, there you go.
That is so weird.
That's amazing.
So Marilyn Monroe. There you go.
Oh my God.
I'm so glad you said 44. There you go.
You're listening to Fubar Radio.
Joined in soon now by one of my favourite people, It's Elliot Spelacula, the 11-year-old boy from Uncle.
Yeah.
So no one was allowed to swear in front of Elliot when we did Uncle. But Elliot took that as an opportunity to rub it in everyone's faces by parading around and swearing at people.
Did I?
We did that table scene where I was on mushrooms and we were sat around the table.
Oh, yeah.
And just before my close-up, you beckoned me over and you went, "Hey, Nick. And action! I was like...
Every Friday,
Nick Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's Fan Club
from 12 PM, FUBAR Radio.
I was joined in the studio by Nick de Semelian. I mean, that's fucking appalling.
It's close.
Go on, say it.
De Semelian.
Dissemblian. Right, yeah, sure.
I think my go-to would have been Semelian.
Long ago when we were booking you, I thought she was booking a sommelier.
Ironically, I'm terrible at pouring wine, so
you're terrible
goes
at
everywhere.
Pouring wine, but are you terrible at tasting wine?
Yeah.
Are you terrible at pouring wine after you've been drinking wine?
Just anything wine-related, I'm bad at.
It sounds like you have a real drinking problem, am I right? Sorry if you do. Do you used to write, or you still write for Empire magazine?
I still write there, I work there, in the office.
For the last 15 years, I hear.
Coming up to 15.
I would say most of what this show is me and Nick, but basically repeating facts that we read in Empire magazine.
I would say
in
that.
In 1996, which the other one says... Yes, I know. I also read it once in Empire 24 years ago.
And also with Empire, I've had arguments with people because they have literally just quoted Empire reviews back to me as their own opinions. And I've gone, I've got that issue. I can get it. I can get it. So you've just written a book, and well, it's been out since June the 6th.
Yeah.
It's called Wild and Crazy Guys. Tell us a little bit about that, Nick.
Gonna fool Bruce Forsyth there. Yeah, it's really about the comedy... Titans, I like the word Titans, so I use that. The big comedy icons of the 80s, you know, Steve Martin, Bill Murray, Eddie Murphy, Chevy Chase, John Candy, Rick Moranis, those guys. And yeah, I was lucky enough to meet quite a few of them and interview them for Empire over the years. And, yeah. And I kind of started hearing their stories and thought, there's a book in here.
You obviously really loved writing about Eddie Murphy. Mm. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I think he was just the opposite of, well, totally the opposite of Bill Murray, but the opposite of a lot of these guys. You know, Bill Murray wasn't sure he wanted to be famous. He wasn't sure he wanted to do comedy. And Eddie Murphy, on the other hand, was like, that's exactly what I want to do, and I'm going to be famous, and I'm going to be rich. And he would go around literally telling everyone that. I think just the pure ambition of him and just the relentlessness of him, and he was, like, going to make it happen.
And doing this when he'll be, like, what, late teens, early 20s?
Yeah.
You know, it's that sort of...
Yeah.
That age as well.
If Richard Pryor was kind of like a... quintessential 70s comedian, and also he was making like the Richard Pryor concert movies, so you'd go to the cinema and see these concert movies. And then Steve Martin was doing the biggest arenas on the planet, and that's why he wore the white suit so people could see him from that. I don't know how like the Arrow Through the Head works when you're sat at the back of like the O2 arena without screens, but like and then you've got Eddie Murphy, and it's kind of like, this isn't the 70s, this is the 80s, it's excessive. He's talking about money and fame, and he's doing impressions of, like, you know, he's doing impressions of Richard Pryor, but Mr. T and Bill Cosby and, like, all of, like, the icons, and it's all about, like, even the leather jacket and the leather trousers and everything, it's almost like a grotesque 80s exaggeration of what stand-up comedy is.
Yeah.
You watch it now, and, like, it's appalling, some of the stuff he says, but it's a lot of it's really funny still.
He was obsessed with Elvis Presley, and I think he just wanted to be comedy's Elvis.
Right, so that makes so much sense. Yeah, there you go.
So he would sit in his dressing room at Saturday Night Live watching Elvis concerts on TV over and over again and like literally studying it. And so that totally comes across in the concert stuff. But yeah, just the ambition and the kind of the pumped up ego. There's a quote in the book from him. The beginning of it is like 1983, and he says, when you think of the 60s, you think of the Beatles. When you think of the 80s, I want everyone to think of Eddie Murphy. And it's just like, who says that?
But they sort of do.
Yeah, and they do, and he pulled it off, which is nuts. He was so huge. He was, you know, what other comedian has a massive entourage and, you know, medallions? And unlike Steve Martin, was one thing on stage and the absolute opposite off stage. Mm. Eddie Murphy came off stage and he was exactly that guy.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, with his mansion and his parties and... He had a driveway in the shape of a 9 because it was his lucky number. But it was just like, just such an oversized kind of character.
I had a message this morning from former fan clubber, Hayley Campbell, who said, ask him why he upset Jackie Chan.
Does she mean why or how?
Well, she's written why.
Yeah. So why did you do it? Do you hate Jackie Chan?
No, but there was a tweet going around a couple of weeks ago saying, have you ever made a celebrity angry or something like that? And so I tweeted, I've been yelled at by two movie stars, Gary Busey and Jackie Chan.
I imagine Gary Busey's easily done.
Yeah, Gary Busey was, I got to go to his house in Malibu. And he's got all these props from his... I'm kind of fascinated by Busey. I don't know if you guys are interested.
Everyone is.
But so, yeah, I got to go to his house, and he's got his garage where he's got all these props from his movies. He's got posters for his movies all over the house. And he's got a box marked Gary's Childhood, but which I didn't look into. But one of the things he had was the surfboard from The Big Wednesday. So we said, Gary, can we get a shot of you holding the surfboard? And he said something. I think it was yes. He was calling us Corndog and Buttplug. Those are the names he gave us. Anyway, we dropped his surfboard on the driveway. He screamed a primal scream of rage. Jackie Chan, I upset in Shanghai because he was in a bad mood anyway.
I can't imagine that.
No.
Yeah. I mean, it was fine in the end, but I got there. He was living in a hotel prepping his next movie.
What was that?
Oh, gosh, I can't remember.
Might be a clue as to why he was in such a bad mood.
Something was going on with the prep, and this was 2010. Yeah. Anyway, he was in a bit of a testy mood, and then we went down and had dinner in the restaurant at the hotel, and he went quite quiet, and I thought, oh, it's all right, I'm going to do some small talk.
It wasn't just you and him having dinner.
It was the two of us and then his assistant and somebody who'd flown out from England, like a PR.
Do you find that quite awkward?
It doesn't happen a lot, having dinner with Jackie Chan, and it was like midnight, it was super late. So I thought, I'll drop in some classic small talk, get him talking. He didn't like the small talk, so he yelled at me. But it was cool, because the next day he was super nice and he drove me around Shanghai in his car, listening to Lionel Richie music. And
did you shout at him and say, not Lionel Richie?
I didn't shout at him, but he carries around, I don't know if he still does it, but at the time he carries around two toy pandas from Hamleys. And he has somebody who carries them around for him, and he let me carry them around the next day. So
that's nice.
What's that about? That's like Tug Speedman at the beginning of Tropic Thunder.
So that's, yeah, I don't know if that answers Hayley's question.
That's weird.
We're still not sure why you upset him.
Well, I asked him some questions about London, and...
No, but this is how.
Oh, how?
Yeah, why? Why did you do
it? Oh, why did I do it? Why? I wasn't trying to. It was inadvertent.
Sounds like you had a bit of an
nobody
axe to
makes,
grind.
Nobody
You're
makes Jackie Chan
angry. You're listening to Foo Bar Radio. It's 152. So you asked him about London. What, have you ever been to London?
He said the pandas. He'd got the pandas in Hamleys. And so I asked him a few questions about, you know, his time
and
there.
And he kicks off.
Mm. Well, literally. And you don't want Jackie Chan to kick off.
Yes.
Because he'll take your fucking head off.
You're listening to Foo Bar Radio.
Really need my You've been listening to a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.